Welcome to Digital Stratosphere, the podcast that helps organizations throughout the world with their digital transformation journeys. Here, you will find independent and technology-agnostic advice with no software vendor sales spin to help you make the best decisions for your organization. Whether you are in the process of selecting technology, in the midst of your transformation, or trying to get your initiative back on track, Digital Stratosphere provides expertise and best practices to help.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, depending on where you're joining us from today. We have our Fun Friday live stream, and our guest today is Mitch Otteson. We are going to talk about some legacy technology transitions, specifically in working with software vendors. So we're excited to have you join us today. Just a reminder, a few logistics. If you are joining on any social platform, you can go ahead and put your comments, questions, engage in the conversation in the chat box, and we'll be able to see it. So if you have questions for Mitch right now or myself, you can go ahead and just pop them in the comments of wherever you're viewing our live stream today. So with that, if you could, since we do have such a global audience, we always love to see where you're joining from today. So if you want to go ahead and drop your location in the chat, just like we start all of our live streams, and we will get to our conversation today. So thank you so much, Mitch, for joining us. Welcome to our Fun Friday live stream.
You bet. Thanks for having me. Happy Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. Or it might be Saturday, depending on where you're joining us from at this point. Sure. But we're excited to have you today. I know you work directly with a lot of our clients here as a manager of strategy and transformation, in helping to navigate that really important decision from legacy software to picking a new system or a cloud-based system in particularly. So if you wouldn't mind for our audience, will you just kind of explain the role you play here at Third Stage?
Sure. So with Third Stage, as a manager of strategy and transformation, my job is to basically look at our clients' infrastructure, their software ecosystem, and try and understand their business and see how those things go together. I'm a big believer that technology is an enabler of business strategy. And we have those executive level meetings where we talk about, hey, what's your strategy? Where do you want to go? One that I like to ask is, what do you want to be when you grow up? As a company, and does the technology align to that? Does it enable that? And will it help you to get there? And so marrying those two things up is something that I am fortunate enough to be able to do with all my clients.
Absolutely. Well, Mitch is so high in demand. I actually just got off of a call before this where people were fighting over Mitch. So very excited to have his time today and be able to have that conversation. So when we're talking about specifically when a client comes to you with a legacy system and they're considering transitioning to a new system, whether it's on-premise, cloud-based, those types of things, what are some of the main considerations that you encourage them to explore before making the commitment to that digital transformation?
Yeah, you know, I like to look at, you know, A, what are you doing today and what are you trying to do? And then B, kind of looking at, you know, where is the rest of your technology? Where do you see your strategy going? How do you see technology enabling that strategy? So I know that cloud is a hot topic right now. And as folks, you know, went remote for a while and are now starting to come back, there are people questioning, can I stick with my on-premise? Can I, you know, do I have to go cloud to be able to support a remote or hybrid workforce? So I think looking at where you're at and where you want to go are some of the major considerations that we look at. And then security is also a big thing that gets folded into the conversation because it's not going away anytime soon. It is more and more of a risk every single day, your security posture. And so it's something that we need to be looking at and questioning our clients on what they're doing and how they're going about doing things.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a great high-level overview, especially because transitioning from your legacy system is a huge, huge undertaking. It's a massive overhaul project that will ripple down to every branch of your organization. So in knowing that, what are some of the things that you see now as trends in the overall software industry when it comes to sunsetting legacy systems?
Well, in general, there's two things that I see that are really pushing the transformations and sometimes forcing our clients' hands. One is the vendors. The vendors are saying, hey, you know, you're on a legacy platform and we need to get off of it. Either they're losing support, the investment being made there, they're stopping to continue security patches and you know, exposing the concept and idea of scaling with the cloud. So the ability to expand your presence for relatively cheap rather than the cost of going and buying new servers and spinning things up and you know, the burden of VPNs for your team, they're able to go through it and scale pretty quickly and fast with some cloud infrastructure. So and so it really just depends on where you're getting the from and how you react to it.
So what if you are an organization, maybe a mid-sized organization that might not be quite ready to transition? Maybe they don't have the budget, the resources, or they just don't feel as though the organization can tolerate that right now. How would you suggest that they work with a software vendor that might be coming to them saying, hey, you know, we're going to sunset your system and we're only going to sell the cloud-based systems now? What type of situations do you, or how do you address those types of situations?
One thing that we've found with our clients that have received that message from the vendor is that the vendor's having a hard time really forcing people to do that. There are some legacy systems that they did a really good job creating, implementing, and they're really entrenched in businesses today. They've set goals for getting folks off of those systems and platforms and into their new current systems, but they're having a harder time getting there. So, you know, I would say when our clients come to us and they say, hey, this vendor told me I have to get off of this in the next 2 years, realize how much leverage you have in that situation, because a lot of others are not getting off. They're really digging their heels in. And so you do have quite a bit of leverage, if it is right for you, to get a really good deal on some software that can really enable future growth.
Absolutely. And I learned from these conversations that we have on these live streams that you actually don't have to switch systems if your vendor tells you. So say they might stop reporting or supporting those systems. That doesn't mean that essentially an organization has to make that transition as well. And I think that's a kind of an unknown option within our overall industry.
Yeah. And with that, you know, I recommend all my clients know your risk exposure. Understanding if they're going to stop you know, the security patches that go into the software, if they own it, that might be a problem. If you own it and it's current and you're responsible for the security and you can make sure that things are locked down because it's, you know, behind your firewall, you're probably not as exposed as some of the others that have a managed service through the vendor. So understanding where the line of responsibility falls and what you can do about it is really helpful. You know, hold out for a little bit longer if you really need to accelerate your information and maybe make a jump, because there's more risk than it's worth to stay on the legacy.
Absolutely. And I think that's an exercise that is healthy no matter if you're going to migrate your overall system and processes to a new technology or you're going to stay. Just that overall consolidation of strategies, of processes, and an audit of your technology. You mentioned cybersecurity. And that's one of, you know, the main open doors when you do have an older technology and you haven't taken the time to audit or update those applications. Say you're using a different bolt-on application for other areas of your business. We know that that kind of leaves the door open to cyber attacks a lot of the time. So I wanted to kind of jump into when you have decided that you're going to move from a legacy system to one of the hot new cloud-based system that your vendor is kind of pushing, what are some considerations when moving from, say, an on-premise or a hybrid legacy system to a fully cloud-based system?
I would think the biggest thing that I would say is, you know, kind of like when you're shopping around for a car or anything really, look at all your options. Just because you are on a product with a vendor doesn't mean you need to stay with them. If they're forcing you off, then that's a void of a contract. So you are we're not legally obligated. Check your legal. We're not legally obligated to stay with that vendor, and let them know that you're shopping around. Let them know and make sure that they know it's a competitive situation, and that they need to re-earn your business. You're not stuck with them. And I think that that's really empowering as a company to know that you can look at different options, different solutions, and really go through that exercise that we looked at before of where are you going, where do you want to be, and which technology is going to help to get you there.
And when we look at evaluating different technologies or even your same vendor with a newer system, what are some things that a business really needs to be aware of, have knowledge of when it comes to their own business to effectively choose a software system that's going to meet their current and future needs?
Yeah, we like to do requirements mapping and looking at, what is it that I'm doing today? What would I like to do tomorrow? We call them future state requirements, and really mapping which future state requirements are absolutely necessary, which ones keep the lights on, because that's really important in a transformation. It doesn't matter. You find the new hot software that's going to be the greatest thing once it's fixed, that you need to keep your business continuity going. So I like to look at mandatories from a continuity standpoint, and then also look at those key features. And there's always a few key features that really differentiate a software from another to help support that future growth. So if it's better insight into your business, if it is a new capability, moving to a new costing method, whatever it is, understanding what's important to you and looking at it from that lens is really important, rather than the lens of the vendors where they're going to try and tell you, here's the new hot thing. It's all about what's in it for you and what makes the most impact on your business.
And with cloud specifically, just digging into that, if say you don't have a cloud system now, what are mm-hmm. some main red flags, considerations to just ensure that your company has the capability to use the cloud effectively?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that that's an area where we really help our clients is to understand the roles and responsibilities of the vendor, your IT organization, and then whoever's doing the hosting. So a lot of times these are being hosted on Amazon, AWS, on Azure, on Oracle. And understanding who's responsible for what and aligning your organization to fill the gaps, because there's always gaps when it comes to cloud computing, making sure you have coverage and that you get the most 360 comprehensive evaluation of your exposure is the best way to do that. And it's a long process. It is, it's pretty detail oriented. But once you go through it, it's so helpful to just know exactly where you stand, where you're exposed, and what you can do about it.
Definitely. I think that's a great overview. And then when it comes to a lot of our global clients and, say, emerging markets, mm-hmm. I know the cloud can be something that can be more of a challenge just to connectivity. So can you speak to what you should consider or evaluate for your business if you might be in a marketplace that is still establishing that connectivity infrastructure?
Of products out there in the network and infrastructure can help in that situation. That's something where oftentimes if you bring that up to the vendors, they'll be able to connect you with another company that has built something specifically for that product and for that geographic area. So just asking the question of what's out there and raising that concern. I think so many times folks are guarded when it comes to their conversations with their vendors. But I like to put them into a problem solving mode for me. If I'm concerned about connectivity, I lay that out there for them so that then they can go into problem solving and see how they can make that work for me. Cause it could be the difference between a deal or not, especially if I have a on-premise solution that is still working. Make them solve the problem and earn the business.
Absolutely. I think that's a great way to put it. Our Clifford Martin, our head of Africa, also talks about those vendor relations, and he coined the term, which I love, I try to use on a daily basis, because you all know I love buzzwords, is professional skepticism when it comes to those vendor conversations. Mm-hmm. And just a point of logistic on my side, you might hear my assistant in the background here, like many of our global young families, childcare is a challenge for us right now. I know Mitch knows that firsthand, but so please excuse any choo-choo trains that you might hear in the background, or if he does make an appearance. Archer, my son, is 3, so he is here with me today.
But I had my 5-month-old dirty a diaper in the middle of a conference call, so I had to explain and put him on camera. That was not me making the gross noises. That was this guy.
Well, I think that it's time we have a conversation on transformation and parenting in the last couple of years, especially from a technology standpoint. But we'll put a pin in that and absolutely, you know, bring you into that conversation with your 2 little ones as well. But back to our legacy system transformation and moving into that. I wondered from a business standpoint, if you do say have a really old mainframe system and now you're kind of bombarded in the marketplace with, do you choose an ERP system or do you go with a best of breed for your different lens of the business? So I'm wondering if you can help us understand how you might navigate that really important choice for an organization.
It's a great question, and it varies for every company. It depends on your size. It depends on the maturity of your organization. It depends on the IT staff that you have to support it. So many things go into it. But I do find that I like to start with an ERP that has a lot of different modules within it, just because the data transfer from within a common system is going to be that much better and you don't have to worry about the integrations as much. So I like to start there and then find my weak points and then reinforce those around it with complementary systems. I found that to be a really effective strategy as far as keeping costs down, as far as keeping user adoption high, because you have similar pages, you have similar look and feel, similar navigation. So I'm a big fan of that strategy. That doesn't work for every organization, especially your larger organizations that seem to have the top tier tool for every single department. But for a lot of my smaller, mid-sized companies, it's a great place to start. And it's a great way to learn about your business and where there are shortcomings and where there's also some maturity on your own and to kind of meet the software where it's at. So I like starting there. But like I said, everyone's a little different, but it has been a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a game show this week, live stream that Eric hosted with a lot of our different global resources and teammates. And when he asked, they had to write on the piece of paper their questions. And when he asked, would you choose best of breed over ERP? They all chose an ERP system, which was the only question they all agreed on. And I'm over here playing like devil's advocate. I'm like, best of breed actually sounds great to me because, why not just integrate that? And as always with my colleagues here at Third Stage, I seem to think it's like flipping a switch in integration, and that is not the case. So no. Can you speak to that a little bit? What are companies, what do they need to ensure that they have as far as strategies, foundations, infrastructures in place if they are going to move from one legacy system to, say, a full ERP system, but have, say, a warehouse management system that they chose a best of breed technology? What are some considerations when you are actually integrating other systems?
Yeah, I like to look at what the technologies are built on. Do they have open APIs? And do I have the skill sets that I need to make these two potential tools talk to each other? Common languages, common data sets, data models can make a big difference when you're connecting two tools to each other. And making sure that you have the expertise to be able to do that. I had one client who was a smaller nonprofit, but I would say that they were really advanced in their API team, and they were able to make just about any system talk to one another. So the complexity of their solution was quite a bit higher than you would expect from when you look at them on paper. So knowing who's on your roster as far as your team is really important. And then just understanding, do I have open APIs or not? And if I don't, is there a workaround that is manageable, or am I creating more work for this? And then, it kind of goes back to, is what is the tool that I brought in from the Best of Breed a competitive differentiator for me, or is it worth getting rid of that too while I'm at it and bringing in the, you know, the module from the ERP system that I already know works with each other and might solve the needs of my business? That's not always comfortable to rip out working software, but it can be worth the effort of evaluating that to make sure that you're getting a functioning tool.
Yeah, absolutely. You said a lot in that statement, so I'm going to unpack it a little bit because I think it's really important to understand. So can you speak to having those systems that might say you are a small business and you have QuickBooks, but you also have a different supply chain management and inventory type of system. When you look at keeping some old systems while transitioning to a newer system, we know that can lead to a lot of technical debt and not maximize business value. So how do you address kind of hanging on to an older piece, module, application when it comes to not fully embracing new technology? How do you have that conversation with your clients?
Yeah, it's a conversation that comes up a lot, and it actually comes up a lot with QuickBooks because people grow their businesses with QuickBooks a lot, and for their money, it does what it needs to do. The problem is, as you get to a certain size and a certain complexity, you have to implement workarounds, and so a lot of times people want to keep their QuickBooks and fix everything around it, and that oftentimes leads us to replacing QuickBooks and going with something that is a full stack ERP solution, because while this new solution does everything that QuickBooks does, it does it in a way that the tools can communicate with one another within that common data model to be able to make data flow through the organization much more cohesively.
Absolutely. And shameless plug here, but next week we will have on our Fun Friday live stream Christy Barber, who is our small business specialist, and she's actually talking about the UK is actually ending their QuickBooks desktop support and moving to only the online version. So if you are a QuickBooks user, definitely check that out, or you're considering QuickBooks for your business. We're going to talk about all things QuickBooks. So, and shameless plug there for our
next.
Yeah, it'll be a fun one for sure. But you also mentioned data a lot when you're talking about considering a software solutions or solution. What are some of the data management tactics, the data architecture, those types of things that you really need to have in place if you are going to have two different systems talk to each other? And to build on that, also if you're going to move your data from an on-premise solution to the cloud?
Yeah. I like to look at the flow of data and how it comes into a tool, what it then is being used for in the new tool where it is not native, and just really understanding the flow of data as it relates to maybe moving over to a new system. That's really important. Also, the data cleansing process and procedure is really not fun. It's not a fun one at all, but it is so valuable. It makes user adoption so much better when they see that the data is there in a way that they're familiar with seeing it. They trust the data that goes in. And if you say, we'll clean it up in the new system, that's a red flag that doesn't work. And you're gonna spend so much more time doing that process, which is so much worse than data cleansing and cleanup. Than it is up front. So definitely go through that exercise. It's painful, but it's worth it.
If you are aiming for transformation success, turn to Third Stage Consulting Group. Third Stage's independent and technology agnostic consulting team helps clients define their digital strategies, define their roadmaps, and manage their transformations. With offices in the US, Europe, and Australia, our team helps the world's most forward-thinking organizations through their transformation pitfalls and risks. If you are embarking on a digital transformation or business change initiative, contact Third Stage Consulting to see how we can help you reach the third stage of transformation success. Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstageconsulting.com.
you're a business and you're not sure how to activate a data cleansing initiative or say audit your legacy system data, you know, do I know if this data is good enough and healthy enough to go into a cloud-based system and really create actionable business value? How do you know, or how do you start that process?
Yeah, you know, I'd say first, don't hesitate to call us. You know, if we're going to have a shameless plug, I think that's a great way where we add value for our clients is, you know, we ask a lot of the questions. We look at the data with our clients and look at the reports that they use. And generally by looking at the outputs of the data, you have a pretty good understanding of what's coming in, what's possible, where there might be shortcomings. Again, looking at a process map, you can, and looking at people's roles and what they do on a daily basis to produce the reports that they need or to produce any of the data that they need, you can find out pretty quickly if things are broken because they're taking things out of the system, manipulating in Excel, plugging it back into the system. So looking for those types of manual processes within your system tells you that you might have some data issues that you need to clean up because you can't run and do the things you need to do without manual overrides or manipulations.
Yeah, and I'll just drive home that point of what if you don't do that before you get a new system, a lot of times that's when our clients engage with us because they purchased this shiny new system. However, it does not do half of the things that the software vendor sold them on, not because the software vendor lied to them, right? But because their data optimization strategies aren't effectively optimizing the system. So I think that's something that's so important because it's going to cost way more time, resources, and that technical debt that we talked about if you don't do that up front. So that said, what are some other pre-work items that organizations can kind of put on their docket when considering moving from a legacy system to a new ERP or best of breed system?
Yeah, I like the idea of standing up a central data repository. I like having that backup available. I like having that really helps to familiarize people with the data and to better understand it. So setting things up generally does help you get ready for success when you're layering a new database on top of it or using an ETL process, extract, transfer, load into a new database. Just that familiarity with the data by going through and setting that up. Not only is it valuable for you, to have your data and have it backed up, but it's also you're going to get that much more out of your new system once it is up and running. So we had some clients that had already started that process before they brought us in, and they were just light years ahead of some of our other clients and where they're at because they knew their data inside and out. They knew what was good. They knew what wasn't. They knew where to focus their efforts, and they knew where they wanted to draw the line of what historical data they wanted to bring over and what they didn't.
Yeah, I think that that can really speed up your overall implementation and create a greater success rate for actually utilizing the software to its maximum potential. So mm-hmm. I think that definitely is something that's really important. The other thing I want to ask when we kind of switch gears and talking about the choice of moving from a legacy technology to a new technology. I think a lot of times we experience a misalignment on the executive team. You know, one stakeholder might really like the legacy technology, or a lot of times CFOs, cough, cough, might not want to spend the money, to buy this new system and the resources that it's going to take to implement it. So how do you create that alignment on the executive side to ensure that you can help a client choose, hey, we're going to stay with our legacy system for the next 5 years, or we're going to go ahead in the next 5 years and implement D365 or something like that?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of having clear executive alignment. And one of the ways that we do that is by going through our executive workshops and making sure that there is an executive sponsor and making sure that's the right executive sponsor. That person plays a critical role in making sure that key decisions make their way up through an organization and can be tiebreakers. And generally, it's not that uncommon where a CIO will call us up, and really it's more a COO or someone in more of that operations role that really needs to be the champion. And we have that tough conversation with the CIO that says, hey, you have an important role to play on this. Thanks for bringing us in, but you aren't the person to drive this project home. That's not a fun conversation, but you know, when we say the success of the project depends on the right person, you know, leading and guiding this, who, you know, a lot of times those operations folks will report to anyways, and is a natural tiebreaker. We get a lot of positive movement and momentum by having the right person in the right role.
Yeah, and I think that's part of our job, right? We come in and we're there to be the business's advocate, not the person that just hired us. Obviously, everyone is involved in these different conversations, but a lot of times it just needs to be the right person to activate that holistic approach. So the people, the process, and the technology, right?
Yeah.
So kind of trickling down the organization, we have that executive alignment, kind of made the decision to move to a new system. What does an organization need to anticipate as far as resources in going into selecting a new software, implementing it, and really taking it to that third stage?
Yeah. You know, I would say that there's a significant difference between the selection process and the implementation process. A lot of times our clients will, you know, spin up an A team of people to go through and do the selection. And the selection, it generally is lighter than the implementation. It's not as far reaching. So when we come back and we say, hey, we need your A team that you put together and more, that can be a shock. And people will try and power through it. They say, hey, I trust my A team and I want to keep going with it. But the more people that you can have that have the right roles and responsibilities that have had their jobs backfilled, that they can really dedicate their time and attention to a project and a transformation like this, the more likely you're going to find success.
And I think that is something that a lot of times businesses don't anticipate, and we kind of coach them through that conversation. What about, I think it's total human nature or organizational nature to pick your top performers within the organization to be a part of this project team, but not realizing that that often takes away from their top performing day job, right? So how do you balance that? Obviously you want that A team that you mentioned, but you also have to keep any disruption from happening in the overall day-to-day processes for the organization. So how do you handle that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We've run into both sides of that, where someone puts together an absolute A team, but they didn't have their roles properly backfilled, so they were trying to do too much and they got burnt out. Mm-hmm. We also saw a situation where you took everyone's number twos and you put them on this project and you let their A team stay with doing what they're doing, and the A team felt left out of, you know, strategic decisions, and it didn't go well. So I think it's finding the right balance of who can I take off of this full time, who has people in place behind them to be able to support backfilling their roles and responsibilities, and who can I lean on to maybe take on a little bit more than what their job is now, but I don't really, they're in a position to backfill them, but I need them on this project. It's finding that mix of people. And so usually you don't have an A plus team on this. I find that, you know, a B plus A minus team is good enough, because it actually, it's a good mix of people and their roles and their perspectives that can oftentimes be stronger than an A team on paper, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. And a lot of times our role, right, in that conversation is helping to identify that overall structure. Because we have seen both examples, as you just mentioned. We've seen organizations that go hard into saying, like, I'm at my best people, this is going to be great, and it will be great. But the fact is, you still have to create revenue to pay for your new system. That's the point, right, of an overall business structure. And then on the other hand, they might take an employee that doesn't have a ton of workload right now and put them in a situation that's going to completely overwhelm them in that. So a lot of times we come in and create those org charts and kind of help you identify those stakeholders. So speaking of employee burnout, we did a live stream a few weeks back with Brianne Peterson, who is an industrial psychologist, that taught us about what actually burnout symptoms look like. Yeah. So I'm wondering how you help, from a project planning perspective, organizations understand that this is a huge undertaking and you cannot just slate someone for 60 hours a week to do that, or you won't achieve any sort of success.
Yeah. Really, it's getting to know the team. It's getting to know their personalities, getting to know their team dynamic. And really, when we go through this and we've signed a before we sign a contract with a vendor, we'll ask them for their staffing plan. And that is what they expect from the client and what the vendor is going to bring to the table. Mm-hmm. And we'll have a very open and honest conversation about that. And we'll let them know if we think the vendor is light or heavy or something like that. We'll layer in some industry expertise. But that usually is pretty shocking to our clients when they see mm-hmm. that, hey, I need to have these 10, 15, 20 people almost dedicated to this full time, or, you know, three-fourths time or something like that. So getting to know them and having that conversation is really helpful. And we try and have that conversation up front early and often and plug it in as much as we can. Because you can't always at the drop of a hat, just you're on this full time now. It's not that easy. So the earlier we're having that conversation and letting them know, and then, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise when they see the staffing model exercise. But it tends to always be a little bit more shocking than even when we've braced them for it.
Right. Definitely. I think that would probably be shocking to me as well. So I totally understand. Yeah. So we touched on the decision making and the strategy and kind of the overall structure of the team. So I want to transition to talk a little bit about some of the navigations or the case studies that you've seen. And maybe you can give us some examples of systems that your clients have moved from a legacy system to either a cloud-based system or a newer system, and maybe give us a quick case study of that journey.
Yeah. I had one client somewhat recently that they were a chemical manufacturer, and they were on Great Plains, which is a legacy Microsoft product that they've been in the process of sunsetting for 5 years now. And I think they'll probably finally get people off in the next 5 to 10 years. People love that system. It was a very strong financial system. You talked about CFOs that cling to some legacy systems. I mean, this was that case. And so when going through and evaluating their business, we identified a ton of manual workarounds. We identified, some potential staff reallocations where we say, hey, instead of your accounting team pulling this data out, crunching numbers for half of their day job, we can automate this. And really seeing the power behind that allowed them to feel confident in going through a selection process. From there, we let Microsoft know we're looking at upgrading into one of your potential products, but we're also looking at a few others. And so by doing that and letting them know that it's a open evaluation, we got really good pricing from Microsoft. We got very strong pricing from the other vendors because they knew, hey, we have an opportunity to win some business, but we have to be aggressive because Microsoft is going to be aggressive. So that was actually one of the best priced software selections that I've ever come across, because everyone knew that they had to be incredibly aggressive to win the business because they were coming off of a legacy system. It really is a good buying opportunity if you can make the case for spending what you spend and can achieve that ROI.
Absolutely. And so in that specific cycle, did they end up choosing a different software, or did they go with the legacy vendor?
They went with the legacy vendor. They went with Microsoft's Business Central. And they were able to do so because they had a couple of third-party solutions that worked really well with Business Central. And they were able to take advantage of existing functionality that wasn't supported by Great Plains, but was by Business Central with that third-party software. And they were able to get really close to real-time data, which was a major pain point for them. They weren't able to get insight into their manufacturing process until a month or two after it happened. Now they'll know a few hours after it happened what's going on the floor.
Yeah, definitely. He has a lot of thoughts on legacy systems, so don't mind him. But so that's interesting in that situation. And we talk a lot about Microsoft Great Plains and the transition there. We have a blog on it if you're interested in learning more. And we also have a sunsetting Microsoft Great Plains YouTube video as well. So just for our audience, if you are interested in that, because that is a common thread that we talk with our clients now. So since you shared that case study, I want to finish up in our last 10 minutes here and kind of talk through organizational change, because that is one thing that really rarely enters the conversation when it comes to moving from a legacy technology to a new technology. Whether you choose the same vendor or not, there's going to be process changes. There's going to be roles and responsibilities that are changing. So how important is change management when considering moving from a legacy technology to a newer technology?
Oh, it's huge. I think you'll find in a lot of legacy solutions, it was very much commonplace, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago to heavily customize your software to meet your business where it was at. Today, we tell our clients to, you know, amend your business processes to meet where the software is at. That's a major shift. And so by looking at that, you'll find that there are a ton of manual processes that you have today that your folks are running and they've never really known any different because that's the way it's always been done. So when you now have the power of automation and a lack of customization, there are a lot of roles and processes and procedures that just go away entirely. And so people's jobs can change and shift pretty dramatically. That's exciting. That's a big opportunity, but it's also scary for the people who have to take on that change. So being able to navigate that well and let people know, hey, you still have a job, it's going to look a little different, and get them excited about what the future holds is huge. Reallocating staff is never easy. But in this very competitive job market, keeping the people that you have, keeping them happy and keeping them engaged is great. And a lot of times they hate doing the manual work anyways, but navigating that situation is tough. So that's a lot of fun to help our clients through that because you know that you're making an impact with people in their lives.
Sure. And we know those are all great points. And we know that ultimately, if you don't have high user adoption and no one's utilizing your system, then there's no way you can achieve the ROI that you put into purchasing the technology. So I'm interested to kind of dig into this a little bit, especially when moving from a legacy technology. A lot of times our executive stakeholders unintentionally go into just telling the organization because they're excited about it. And the organization can really suffer these shockwaves of fear because the messaging was not intentional or really thought through. So what is the best way to communicate with your organization as a leader that you will be going through this transition in a way that won't create a lot of resistance or disruption for your overall day-to-day workforce?
Yeah, that happens so commonly where someone will come out and just, here it is, we're doing it, and there's no detail about what that means for me. So I think having those conversations and being brutally honest with people is the best way to handle it. One of my clients, we coached them and said, hey, your job's going to change. We don't know exactly how it's going to change, but we'll keep you, you'll be involved in the process and you'll get to see where things go and get to kind of pick and choose what is exciting for you. Has been a very effective way to navigate that change. There's also no such thing as too much communication. I'm a big fan of, you know, blasting things out in different mediums to hit the different ways that people communicate. So we had a client where we were trying to communicate this change, and they had 5 or 6 distribution channels for different content for their people in the field, their people in the office, their people that work night shifts. No one's going to receive and digest the information the same way. So putting it out there in so many different ways, the same messaging, is really effective to make sure that your message gets hit across all the different channels.
Sorry, I didn't catch that last part. Probably nobody else did either. So you mentioned multiple distribution channels and kind of customizing your approach per each kind of subculture is what I got from that in midstream. So
one of the most effective ways this company had was they were big on free food in the break room. So naturally, I'm all for it. I love to eat. The break room was where some of their best communicating took place. So there were posters all over the break room. They had a bulletin board that, you know, I thought bulletin boards were old school, to be perfectly honest. I'm like, wait, we're going to go print something, you have a printer still, but it was such an effective communication medium for them, that they made sure that the most up-to-date content was always on that bulletin board. And so it's, you just understanding your organization and how you communicate and then putting your message through those channels is the best way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, as you said, little things can really make a huge impact, whether it is like building that overall kind of watering hole type of experience with, you know, those communications. One of our directors, Teresa Richardson, who is our OCM specialist, talks a lot about how the worst way you can communicate changes in technology is through email. And that's one of her main mantras and overall mechanisms with that. So I'm curious, I genuinely am, because I've never asked one of our consultants this before, but one of the main things we go into with an organization is a readiness assessment. You know, are you ready for this? Especially when looking at moving from a legacy technology to a new system or a cloud-based system. Do you ever get a readiness assessment back and say we've got issues to overcome? And how do you deal with that if you do have an organization that truly doesn't understand their culture or their overall appetite of their community for a new technology?
Yeah, we have gotten a few back where it's a little, I don't know if cringy is the right word. I'm gonna stick with it, a little cringy. And I think that was, you know, when we have had that comeback, we kind of pumped the brakes on that a little bit and we really focus and dig in there to try and understand why and see what we can do to lay a more solid foundation to make sure that this change doesn't go the way that other changes have. The most common driver of that is a previous project that went off the rails and people have PTSD about it. And one of the big things that we will say is, we as third stage will get in front of the client and their team and say, we'll take that head on and say, hey, this project, we know it was a disaster. Guess what? You know, they brought us in. They're learning from their mistakes and not taking it on by themselves. Here's what we saw and here's how we'll do things differently. Really owning that has been very effective to just come hat in hand and say, we know that we messed up before, but here's how we've learned from it. And just us being in there is a big show of that, I think. And putting us in front of people has generally done well with that.
I could only imagine. When we were interviewing the head of Lockheed Martin, their HR team, we asked a lot, Eric and I, about how you measure the success or the overall business value of the project, and he said attrition, and then he schooled me in learning that you actually can measure trust of your ability to implement a new technology or transition from a legacy system to a new system, because you'll look at it through employee attrition. If you put this scenario that's really toxic on the table because you didn't think through these communication plans and overall structure, then you'll be looking at a workforce that, you have a new technology, but your entire culture is completely turned over. And I can imagine that would be a very difficult navigation to go through as a challenge.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to hear that. I might need to check out that video.
Yeah, it's a really good one. It's absolutely good. good one on our Ground Control podcast, where you can find that on our YouTube channel, on Eric's YouTube channel, or you can head over to wherever you subscribe to podcasts. We have Ground Control, which is our longer form podcast, and then Digital Stratosphere, which is our shorter form podcast that we put out 3 days a week. So definitely head over there. That it's been one of my favorite interviews because it was all about measuring the human side of technology implementation.
Yeah. I mean, the head of Lockheed Martin makes a really good point in that attrition is a great way to measure that. I never really thought about it that way, but it makes a lot of sense. And we have noticed that companies that are better positioned to adopt things have had a longer tenure staff. And so that is one thing that we look at is, you know, do you have relatively new staff? Do you have a long tenured staff? If you have a new staff, we communicate slightly differently because the history of the company isn't nearly as important as the different communication channels.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we established, you know, organizational change is huge to that. But I'm wondering if you could pull out, why is it especially important when moving from a legacy technology that people have a relationship with to a new technology that might be a bit different than what they have experienced on a day-to-day basis?
I think the biggest thing that we encounter is that, well, this is the way we've always done it, or not understanding why the change is necessary. So when we do our workshops with our clients, sometimes people will be like, there's nothing wrong with our system whatsoever. And I always smile when I hear that, because then we dig in a little bit more. And then we ask, you know, what are some pain points? What are you doing manually? And then the gripe session begins. And you really realize when you uncover things that you're comfortable with the system, but you see the benefit in going to something new that can solve for those manual tasks. Helping to make that connection and leading the horse to water, for lack of a better term, has been a really effective way to show people that this isn't that scary. It's going to be hard, and it's going to be uncomfortable, but you know, you can solve for some of these pain points by changing your technology from this thing that you're very comfortable with.
Absolutely. I think that's perfectly well said, and a great way to kind of put a bow on our awesome conversation here today. So final tip, even though whenever I ask this, no one sticks to the one tip you would give because you're consultants and you can't do that. But if you were to give one tip or two to organizations that are considering this humongous choice of moving from a legacy system to a new system, whether they're under pressure from vendors or not, what would be the one thing that you would recommend that they, you know, go through in exploring this decision?
I'm trying to think of the quote that popped into my mind. If you want to go fast, go alone. And if you want to go far, go together. I'm going to leave it at one thing. Go together with us and we'll help you to navigate this. I think that is, you know, we help our clients to really take a step back and look at what they're doing. And that unbiased third party perspective, I think, is invaluable when you're going through and making decisions, because there's countless decisions that need to be made. So I think that working with us is the best thing that you can do. And that's not a shameless plug. That is an actual, like, I really do believe that. So that would be my biggest piece of feedback. And if you aren't going to work with us, you know, really just take your time to think about what your decisions are, how, you know, put yourself in your teammate's shoes, your coworker's shoes, your direct report's shoes, and look at how that would be communicated to you if that was happening and you were in their shoes. So, I guess that was two. So I lied.
That's okay. You all do it. But, you know, I always say the more the merrier in these situations. Yeah. And, you know, I'll just add on that a little bit too, because being totally independent and agnostic is in a place where sometimes we go to our clients and say, no, you know, that you don't want a new technology or you don't need a new technology. And the reason that we have the capability of doing that is because we don't have any financial relationships or anything like that with system integrators or vendors. So we always kind of position it as an insurance policy, you know, it's much more expensive to go back and triage a broken project or a fast decision, as your so wise proverb, than really doing things right up front. So if you do have questions on navigating any move or transition from a legacy system to a newer system, or even if you have questions that, hey, my vendor is telling me A, B, and C, is that correct? We do that a lot for our clients, and you can reach out to us directly. You can reach out to myself or Mitch via LinkedIn, and then our email addresses are also on our website as well.
Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstage-consulting.com.